I'd like to speak this evening really about the inspiration of this practice, of the possibilities of this practice. Really the kind of what the teachings point to is the potential for a life free of suffering, free of stress, free of worry, free of anxiety, free of any of the kind of painful mind states. That nothing is experienced as an affliction, as painful or different than it should be. And I think it's an interesting question to think about over the time of the retreat. You know, have you been struggling to get somewhere or to get rid of something? You know, that if only this wasn't present, then I could be okay. You know, and this could be anything, obviously. This could be my cold or my pain in my lower back, or it could be this painful person that keeps coming into my mind, you know, the kind of the mind wanting things to be different than they are. And the promise of this practice and these teachings is that nothing really needs to be an obstacle to being at peace. I recall being on a retreat almost 20 years ago in India. It was actually right where the Buddha was enlightened. So I think there was extra special pressure, you know. Got to be up, perform really well, you know. be on your best game there in Bodh Gaya. And that may have been part of what was going on for me, but I remember sitting on this retreat. It was a 10-day retreat, and for about 5 or 6 days I was in this really state of mind that there was somewhere that I needed to get to that wasn't where I was right now, and that if only I could get there, then things would be okay. You know, I'd find peace and I'd find a sense of well-being, but I definitely wasn't there. You know, that sense of, you know, the striving, and it was very pervasive. It was a kind of strong memory of that sense of, like, something is missing, I'm not there, I could get there, I need to get there. What do I need to see in order to be at peace, in order to be free, or at least freer than I was feeling at that time? And something happened at about the 6th or the 7th day. And it didn't come from striving. It came from a kind of more of a mysterious place of something, somehow letting go happened. You know, it wasn't as though I said, oh, I'm going to let go. Because the same mind that lets go when we do that is the same mind that's striving, you know. So it's like this: the letting go comes from a different place than the striving does. It comes from a kind of a deeper place of awareness, of kind of out of a more mysterious place. But there was a letting go. And with the letting go of the striving to get somewhere, I experienced a deep sense of peace and well-being. You know, it became pervasive. It was like there was nothing that I needed to do. There was nowhere I needed to get to. There was nothing whatsoever that was wrong with the present moment. You know, even if there was an itch or whatever there might be. And nothing really had changed. The external conditions certainly hadn't changed. It was still sitting and walking and sitting and walking and having a meal. But something internally shifted. And it went from suffering to freedom. You know, went from a sense of lack, need, something missing, to ease, contentment, well-being, equanimity. And it became, you know, it affected all areas of my life. Now, I'm not saying it went on forever. There were obviously still things that could come back and did come back that would take me back to the place of kind of wanting or neediness or stress or worry. But it was definitely a letting go. And I think of the something that the great Thai teacher Ajahn Chah said, who's a teacher of Jack Kornfield and others. He said, if you let go a little, you'll find a little freedom, a little peace. If you let go a lot, you'll experience a lot of freedom, a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you'll experience complete freedom from suffering, complete peace. Your struggle with the world will be at an end. So let go a little peace, let go a lot of peace. Let go completely, and there's complete freedom from suffering. Your struggle with the world will be at an end. I like that last sentence, because I experience my suffering and others' suffering as in some way a struggle with the world. We're in conflict with the way things are. We're in conflict with our own experience. We're in conflict with other people. We're in conflict with the way the country is being run or we think the world is going. We're in some conflict with the way things are. Now, this isn't to say this, you know, the way things are is absolutely perfect. You know, in a kind of Zen way, we could say, yes, it's absolutely perfect. It's kind of imperfect and absolutely perfect in its imperfection. But obviously, there's a great deal that is painful, that's harmful, of suffering. And yet, the freedom comes with the acknowledgement, the acceptance of this, the truth of this moment as it is, the truth of the reality of this moment, this experience as it is. And when we can let go in that profound way, in that kind of fundamental way, then the struggle comes to an end. I think that's really the story of the Buddha's life. If I had a lot more time, I'd kind of talk about that this evening, because it's a wonderful, wonderful kind of archetypal story of somebody who has everything in material, comfort, etc., but realizes that there's something missing and goes off on a search, you know, leaves his home, becomes a monastic, a kind of, not a monastic, formal monastic, a wandering mendicant, a beggar, and practices and studies and gets into all of these austere and ascetic practices to find if there's freedom from suffering. And ultimately, his experience, his awakening was the realization that that there is a middle path to freedom from suffering, a middle path to awakening, to enlightenment, which is not, you know, doesn't come from austerity, doesn't come from laxity. It comes from diligent effort, but deeply accepting the truth of how things are. So I don't know how things, well, I do know somewhat from people, how people have shared in the group, but how you've experienced this kind of letting go and opening to the moment as it's unfolding, and have you been able to experience a little peace from a little letting go, or maybe a lot of peace from a lot of letting go, of kind of putting down some burden in a way that you might have had. The way the Tibetan teacher Chogyam Trungpa put it is, he said, there's no need to struggle to be free. The absence of struggle is itself freedom. So there's no need to struggle to be free. The absence of struggle is itself freedom. So certainly what I was experiencing on that retreat was a struggle. There was somewhere I wasn't, and I was, you know, there was effort, but it wasn't wise effort. It was kind of an intense kind of holding on effort. And it was only when there was some kind of letting go of that that there was the possibility of a sense of much deeper freedom. And that's really a kind of what we're balancing in our practice. We talked about it in one of the groups this afternoon, of how there's effort and there's diligence and there's determination, but if we're really, really striving too much, then the striving gets in the way of being able to really be at peace, because there's really a struggle between where we are and where we want to be or think we should be. The Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi put it like this. He said, as long as we have some definite idea about or some hope in the future, we cannot really be serious with the moment that exists right now. As long as we have some definite idea about or some hope in the future, we cannot really be serious with the moment that exists right now. So the more we're leaning into the future, the less we can be present in this moment as it is. So can we incline our mind towards what is wholesome, what is beneficial, but do it in a way where there isn't a kind of a separation between the now and the later, the kind of leaning into the future. Wherever there's that gap, there'll be suffering. So can we incline our minds, can we set our intention, but hold it lightly so that we're fully engaged with and in the present moment as it's unfolding. I think the inspiration really at the core of the Buddhist teachings and the Buddhist path is that our happiness and our well-being don't come from you know, the conditions of our birth or our good luck or good fortune, or even from the habits that we have formed. But our happiness and well-being comes from how we are meeting our direct experience. That how we meet our experience determines our freedom, determines the peace that's possible in our lives. If we meet this moment wholeheartedly, accepting, taking refuge in reality, in the truth of this moment as it is, then freedom is possible in whatever circumstances exist, even in the most dire situations. I remember the quote from Viktor Frankl speaking about being in the Nazi concentration camps and saying they could take everything from us but the last of the human freedoms, the freedom to determine how we meet our experience, the freedom to choose how we meet our circumstances. Nobody and no conditions can take this away from us, although we could give it away, but we have this freedom. How am I going to meet this moment? Am I going to meet it with resistance, with rejection, with anger, with craving, with delusion, distraction? Or am I going to meet it with acceptance, with curiosity, with kindness? So at the core of the teachings and the practices of the Buddha is the proposition that we can train our minds. You know, the core of the teachings are the Four Noble Truths, that, you know, that suffering is a part of human existence, that the origin of our suffering is essentially wanting things to be other than they are. The Buddha talked about it as craving. We're wanting things that we don't have, or we're wanting things to be different than they are. We're wanting things to change. And in that wanting, the gap between how things are and how we want them to be, that's the suffering. So that's the second noble truth, that the origin of the suffering is in not seeing things as they really are and trying to hold on to, you know, trying to get happiness where it's not possible to find it, taking false refuges in where there really isn't refuge, where there isn't safety. We think, this will make me happy, if only I had this, and we crave it. But even then, when we get it, that's not true happiness. The true happiness comes from how we meet our circumstances, how we meet our experience. And the third noble truth is that Freedom comes from letting go of the craving. It's like once we see the holding on and realize the pain that it's causing us, then there can be a letting go. It's like holding a hot coal in our hands and, you know, not having to think, oh, is this hurting? Is this painful? It's so painful, when we see it clearly, it's a kind of a natural dropping of what we're holding on to. And that's the third, where all of the teachings point to, that we can live free of suffering. We can live a life completely free of suffering. And how we attain freedom from suffering, how we arrive at that freedom in our lives, is through training the mind. The Buddha said, nothing can do you more harm than an untrained mind. Even your worst enemy can't do you more harm than an untrained mind. So we look around our world today, we see the suffering, the killings and the wars and the harm that's caused, and people believing if only we kill them before they kill us, then we'll be okay. And all of the suffering that comes from an untrained mind, essentially from acting out, you know, our cravings, or acting out our hatred or our aversion or our lack of clarity of mind, how much suffering comes from an untrained mind. There's no limit, really, to the harm that can come. We see it, obviously. We don't have to look too far to see it around the world and in our own society, of the harm that comes from thinking, you know, other people are separate from us, they're different from us, we're better than them, so therefore it's justified in us harming them or separating them or making them second-class citizens or whatever. All of that suffering that comes from that untrained mind, that not seeing things as they really are. And the Buddha said, nothing can do you more good than a trained mind. Not even your best friend, not even your parents can do you more good than a trained mind. So what leads to happiness and well-being is training the mind. The path that the Buddha laid out to train the mind is called the Eightfold Path, and I won't kind of go through that in detail, but we're practicing a very important part of the path here on retreat. We're practicing the mind training part of the path, cultivating wise mindfulness, wise effort, wise concentration within a framework of ethical behavior, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. And we're cultivating wisdom, wise understanding, clear seeing of things, and wise intention. So this path to freedom from suffering is a training of the mind and the training of the heart. And the Buddha talked about it in terms of two key practices. He said, abandon what is unskillful and cultivate the good. So I'll kind of talk about these two paths of training, or two aspects of the training of the heart and the mind to live freely. Abandon what is unskillful, he said. You can do this. If it weren't possible to abandon the unskillful, I wouldn't ask you to do it. If it led to your harm and suffering, I wouldn't ask you to abandon the unskillful. But because it leads to happiness and to well-being, I say to you, abandon the unskillful. And I like the way those words have come down to us, because I hear the authentic voice of the Buddha as a teacher saying, look, I wouldn't ask you to do this if it was going to lead to your harm, to your suffering. But because it leads to well-being, I say to you, abandon what is unskillful. And then he says, cultivate the good. You can do this. If it weren't possible to do it, I wouldn't ask you to do it. If it led to harm, I wouldn't ask you to cultivate the good. But because it leads to well-being, to happiness, to peace, I say to you, cultivate the good. So what do we mean by abandon the unskillful and cultivate the good? What are we abandoning and what are we cultivating? Well, we've been practicing and working with practice of mindfulness, of bringing awareness to our experience just as it is, saying yes, welcoming the guests, saying yes to this moment. And this is the practice really of abandoning the unskillful. It's to see that when states of mind arise that are painful, are afflictive, that lead to, you know, us feeling kind of caught up in suffering, we can abandon those states by simply by bringing awareness to our experience, opening fully to them, and seeing that, you know, okay, I'm feeling really angry. I'm thinking about a situation at work and a colleague, you know, screamed at me or said something unkind to me. And I keep getting pulled back into that. And whenever I get pulled back into it, I'm kind of, you know, angry on what I'm going to say to them. And, you know, I'm feeling all that energy of anger in me. Now, if I meet that emotion, that mind state, unskillfully, then it could lead to all sorts of harm. You know, I could go in, I could send angry emails, I could scream at them, I could, you know, all sorts of unpleasant and painful things could arise if I'm not aware of my experience, if I'm not acting skillfully, I'm not meeting that experience wisely and skillfully. But if I can experience this, what is this I'm feeling right now? What is this anger? I'm feeling tight in my stomach and my chest. I'm feeling heat around my face. I'm experiencing these thoughts about what I'm going to do and what, you know, what I'm going to say to them. So if I can open to those experiences, open to what I'm feeling in the body, open to what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing, the emotions and the mind states I'm experiencing, noticing that I'm not liking what I'm feeling, bring awareness to my thoughts and my mind state, then I can experience all of these as coming and staying for a while, and then when they're ready to, they pass. Like if I stay with those bodily feelings and I genuinely open to the feelings, the tightness, the heat, the feeling of resistance in the body, I breathe into it all those feelings. And I don't kind of spin them out into thoughts of, you know, what I'm going to say and what I'm going to do, but I stay with those feelings. Then I can, if you like, I can ride the waves of those feelings. I can experience them coming and going. Maybe they get strong for a while. Maybe they shift. Maybe they move. Maybe they become intense. But then if I stay with them, what I notice is that they, you know, that they're impermanent. They're not solid. They only have the illusion of solidity because I've become fixated on them. You know, I've become identified with that story of, you know, what the person has done and what I'm going to do and what I should say or should do. If I can let go of that, then what's really there at all? You know, what is there that's really solid? What is there that's really me in all of this? You know, if I can experience it as energy, it can be like a thank you. It can be like, are those frogs? It can be like frogs. It can be like a weather system passing through. You know, that you know, it has a lot of energy, it could have a lot of power. But if I'm not struggling with it, then it just does its thing and passes on. Now, this isn't to say it's easy. You know, if we're caught up in a really strong emotion, it's not easy. But that's really the practice, is to invite ourselves to stay with that. So to feel it. How does it feel in my body? You know, How does it feel as an emotion moving through me? How does it feel as a mind state, as the thoughts coming up? And if I'm not proliferating the thoughts, if I'm not going, you know, yeah, and kind of throwing fuel on the thoughts, then the thoughts as well just come and go. So everything comes and goes. We can experience what the Buddha spoke of as three fundamental characteristics of everything. And he talked about them as impermanence, unreliability, and selflessness. They're not a solid, permanent self. That there's, it's all changing, that none of it can be held on to, and it doesn't belong to us. It's just, you know, it's only that it turns into suffering when we fixate on it, when we solidify it, when we get hooked on it. So our work really is to untangle ourselves from these painful experiences. And that's what the Buddha spoke about as abandoning the unskillful. It's to see everything that comes along can be experienced and open to with acceptance, with kindness, with interest. And if we do that, then it can all just come and go. There's a teacher on the West Coast, Philip Moffett, a colleague, friend, and he has a book some of you may be familiar with called Dancing with Life. It's on the Four Noble Truths, on the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, but it's an image that I find a very powerful one of dancing with life. Because really what we're doing when we bring a skillful attention to our experience is we're dancing with life. You know, it's kind of, you could also look at it as kind of like a martial art where the energy that's coming at you, you use that energy, but you don't kind of respond to it like head on, but you kind of go with its flow. And, you know, like the way water works, water goes around rocks rather than trying to crack its way through, you know. And that's really what we're doing when we meet our experience skillfully. It's just to open in that way, not to kind of meet it with resistance, but to dance with life. And what I think we're doing a lot of the time is we're not dancing with life so much as wrestling with it. You know, we're trying to wrestle life to the ground and pin it down and like control it. And when we do that, it's a recipe for suffering. You know, as my teacher, Jack Kornfield, would often say, good luck. You know, good luck trying to do that. Good luck trying to wrestle with life, because life will be life. It won't go, maybe sometimes it will go the way we want it to do, but it's not because we wanted it to, it's because that's the way things unfolded, you know? And so wrestling with our experience isn't the most helpful way to go. But if we can dance with life, if we can meet our experience with these qualities of mindfulness, particularly the qualities of kindness to ourselves and kindness to our experience, bringing curiosity and interest to something that we might otherwise solidify. When we're interested in it, it kind of, we see what makes it up and we see all the changing nature of it. And to bring a quality of acceptance, of accepting that this moment is like this, the truth of this moment as it is, not resisting. In this way, we can abandon what's unskillful. We can see what leads to harm, and we can make choices. We can make choices to, with any experience that we have, if we stay with it, we have at least two choices. One is a choice of resisting or acting it out in an unhealthy way. You know, if, particularly if it's a difficult experience, we could resist it or push it away, or we could avoid it, we could run away from it in some way. Or, with awareness, we can open to it. And when we open to our experience with mindfulness, then choices open up. Now, it's again another saying from a statement from Viktor Frankl. He said, between the stimulus and the response is a space. And in that space, lies our power to choose, and in that power, in our power to choose, lies our freedom. So, if we can pause, you know, with awareness between the stimulus which otherwise might easily lead to reactivity or habitual behaviors, with awareness we can pause, we can find that space, and in that space we can make a choice. We can know, okay, doing what I've done 100 times before that always led to suffering, is that going to lead to happiness and well-being? Probably not. Let me incline my mind in the other direction, towards staying with my experience, or maybe making a more helpful or healthy choice in this situation. So a choice opens up, and we can choose a path that leads to well-being and happiness rather than to stress and anxiety and worry and suffering. So the fruits of abandoning what is unskillful is to live without struggle, with peace and with well-being, with dispassion. And as Ajahn Chah said, if we can let go completely, then our struggles will be at an end, will be the end of suffering. But even if we can just let go in this particular area, seeing that continuing to fixate on that person that we're having trouble with and making them into the problem and they need to change for me to be okay. We had a lovely discussion about this today in one of the groups, like the realization that, you know, I'm not going to be able to change this person. You know, I'm not going to be able to change things out there. Obviously, we can have some influence and we can have some impact, but we can't change the difficult person. The one difficult person we can change is ourselves. And that's by turning the attention inward. Excuse me. You know, whenever someone is, or someone or something is pushing our buttons, it's an indication that there's something to be looked at. There's something here I need to pay attention to. You know, even if a person is acting, you know, thoughtlessly, unskillfully, unkindly, and I am getting agitated about that, it's not to deny that the person is behaving unskillfully or thoughtlessly, but it is to say there is something that I need to pay attention to. There's something I need to open to and acknowledge and say yes to, the difficult feelings that I'm having, so that I'm not trying to change that person out there or make them different than they are. I'm, you know, maybe circumstances will change and they will change. Maybe something that I do kind of in an indirect way influences them and there's a shift, and we talked about that today. But fundamentally, the happiness really depends on whether I can train my own heart and mind to meet what is unfolding with equanimity, with a sense of peace and acceptance of this is how things are right now. And if I can do that, then there's freedom in whatever situation. So however painful the situation, we can train our minds and our hearts to meet our experience with that quality of acceptance and of equanimity. The other part of the training is to cultivate the good. What do we mean by cultivate the good? What did the Buddha mean? He meant to cultivate qualities of heart and mind that lead to well-being, that lead to happiness, that lead to peace, that lead to freedom. So what are the qualities of heart and mind that we can cultivate? There are probably innumerable qualities. I mean, you could name generosity, gratitude, kindness, compassion, peace, equanimity. joy. All of these are qualities that the qualities of heart and mind that are conducive to happiness, to freedom, to well-being. And the Buddha said you can train your mind to cultivate these qualities. We practice today working with loving kindness, which is obviously a quality that we cultivate. We incline the mind towards loving kindness. You know, the different ways that we can do that. One, the ways we did it today were kind of inviting, may I, may you be happy, safe, free from harm. May you live with ease, may I live with ease. Kind of we're inclining our minds in that direction of cultivation of these states that lead to well-being. We can choose to incline our minds in these directions. You know, I've become aware of that. Sometimes I find when I'm not a morning person, really. And, sometimes I get up and I'm kind of feeling cranky and it takes me, you know, a few cups of tea to, you know, to get to a place of kind of relative, you know, well-being. And but sometimes I have to go out and I teach or do various things. I'm kind of, you know, I'm in a state where I'm not feeling too, you know, my mind is kind of in a little bit of, you know, something of an irritated state and kind of a little annoyed at things without a lot of reason for it, but that's just what happens to be present at the time. But I've realized with practice that it's possible to change the channel. You know, with enough awareness, we can, it's like moving from, you know, country to, you know, R&B or something on the radio, you know. You know, I'm not saying one's better than the other. You might prefer one to the other. I'm not saying one's cultivating the good and the other's the unskillful. But depends on one's taste. But we can see, like, is it helpful for me to be in this place where I, when my mind is telling this story of, things shouldn't be like this. I wish I didn't feel like this. Crummy day. Yeah, it's not going to get any better. You know, all this, these stories. Or can I actually say, well, no, this isn't helpful to me. And consciously change the channel and cultivate joy, happiness, well-being. It could be just by, you know, breathing, taking some breaths and inviting in, may I be happy, you know, may I be free from suffering. Maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes of loving kindness meditation. Maybe inclining the mind towards joy, you know, or peace or equanimity. May I be at peace right now. May I accept this moment as it is. So we can change the channel. We can incline our minds towards well-being. And that serves happiness and helps us to find freedom from suffering. I want to mention, and I'm not going to go into detail on these this evening, but to mention 7 qualities that the Buddha said called enlightenment factors or factors of awakening, which are qualities that when we cultivate them, and we cultivate them in a balanced way, that it leads to freedom from suffering. It leads to enlightenment. These qualities lead to awakening. And maybe we'll do this as a little bit of a meditation or a reflection. So if you might want to close your eyes for a couple of minutes, and we'll just do this. Just sitting with what's present for you right now. And the first of the qualities is one that we've been exploring over these days, is the quality of mindfulness. Mindfulness, this quality of opening to our experience just as it is. So if just open to whatever is present for you right now. There may be some tiredness, it's been a longish day. There may be some quality of interest or lack of interest in the themes. Just notice whatever is present. bringing a kind, curious, non-judging awareness to whatever is present. And three of these qualities, three of these seven qualities, are qualities of that help kind of energize or kind of awaken the heart and the mind. And three are stabilizing, kind of stabilizing the heart and mind. So the first of these energizing qualities is the quality of investigation. Quality of, we spoke about this, of kind of bringing curiosity, inquiry to our experience. So you might just bring this quality of investigation to what's present right now. What am I aware of? What am I noticing? What am I experiencing? Maybe there's some tension somewhere, and just bringing a quality of curiosity to that. Is this asking something of me? Maybe a quality of kindness or acceptance. This quality of investigating our experience is the second factor of awakening. And this factor of investigation in turn gives rise to, kind of each of these tends to lead to the next quality. It gives rise to energy. Energy, this force that carries us towards where we're wanting to go. It's a quality very closely aligned with effort, wise effort. Feeling the quality of energy, the effort that leads to abandoning unskillful states, and the energy that leads to cultivating wholesome and beneficial states. So just asking, is energy present right now? And inviting the arising of energy in the heart and in the mind. And breathe into it and feel this whole body-mind field. It's energy, inviting energy into the body and the mind. And when we do this, it tends to give rise to another quality, energizing quality of joy. You might ask yourself, is there joy present right now in the heart and in the mind? And can you invite in the quality of joy? We can cultivate joy by reflecting on gratitude of things that we're grateful for in our lives. Just maybe bringing to mind some things you're grateful for and see if there's a welling up in the heart of gratitude, of joy, the arising of joy, awakening joy in the heart. And let the feeling, if it's arising, let it permeate the body and the heart and the mind. Awakening joy. And when the joy kind of becomes a little quieter, settles down a bit, it moves towards a quality of contentment, or calm, tranquility. tranquility, a less effervescent, perhaps, quality, a quieter quality, sense of ease, contentment, calm. Is this quality of calm or tranquility present? Can you invite this quality, this awakening quality, this enlightenment factor? Calm, tranquility. Just breathing into this field of qualities, just that we can cultivate, invite in. And as the mind becomes more calm and at ease, tranquil, it gives rise to more focus, more concentration. And this quality of the sixth of these factors of concentration, the mind becomes more one-pointed, kind of less moving around, wobbly, more present, concentrated, focused, balanced. Inviting in this quality of concentration. Just letting the mind be focused and one-pointed here. The body and the heart and the mind. And concentration, in turn, gives rise to the quality of equanimity, which is the seventh of these enlightenment factors, or factors of awakening. Factors, qualities conducive to awakening, to freedom, living free of suffering. This quality of equanimity is one of balance, of equilibrium, of meeting the joys and the sorrows of life with an even mind. There's a well-known Zen story of equanimity. And the story is that at a time of civil war in Korea, a certain general led his troops through province after province, overrunning whatever stood in his path. The people of one town, knowing that he was coming and having heard tales of his cruelty, all fled into the mountains. The general arrived in the empty town with his troops and sent them out to search the town. Some of the soldiers came back and reported that only one person remained, a Zen priest. The general strode over to the temple, walked in, and pulled out his sword and said, "Don't you know who I am? I'm the one who can run you through without batting an eye." The Zen master looked back and calmly responded, "And I, sir, am one who can be run through without batting an eye." The general, hearing this, bowed and left. It can be run through without batting an eye. So that quality, the quality of equanimity. And these seven factors of enlightenment, they're qualities that we can cultivate, and it's important to balance them. Sometimes we can use this as a meditation practice on retreat, particularly, of just looking at what's present. You know, how is the energy? How is the joy? How is the concentration? Is the mind focused? Is it calm? Is mindfulness present? Is the quality of investigation sharp and focused, clear? So we can, if one of these qualities is less developed or seems to be missing, I remember on retreat, practicing with these qualities and just noticing an absence of joy, You know, it just joy didn't seem to be present. It seemed like, you know, a certain dryness, and the others were fairly well developed. And so that was a good sign to just to really pay attention to cultivating joy, of inviting in joy into the heart and into the mind. So cultivating these qualities of these seven qualities, these seven factors of awakening. And when we abandon what is unskillful, abandon greed and craving and hatred and cruelty and kind of painful states of mind that we can get caught up in, where we solidify ourselves or we solidify others or we solidify our experience, then we suffer. So just to be able to open with kindness and awareness to what's here, and also to cultivate qualities that lead to freedom, that lead to peace, that lead to well-being. The great Zen teacher Dogen said, "To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things." Robert Bly said, "Every part of us that we don't learn to love, to accept and love, will become hostile to us. Every part of us that we don't learn to accept and love will become hostile to us." So what we're doing in this practice, on this retreat, is opening to all parts of ourselves. We're leaving no stone unturned. We're not, you know, our intention is not to have a kind of a hidden room where there's something painful that we're not going to. We're opening the spaces, including the spaces that are the painful places. What Pema Chodron had a title, "The Places That Scare Us." Places that scare us? You? Oh, me. Yeah, the places that scare you. Yeah, to open to whatever is arising in the body, in the heart, and the mind. And sometimes we need to use skillful means to open. Sometimes if it's a very, very painful place, it doesn't serve us to just try and sit in the middle of it. We might need to kind of move in more kindly and move out, open kind of perhaps to a larger awareness, and then come back to that place. But ultimately, we're opening to everything, leaving no stone unturned, abandoning what's unskillful, cultivating the good. I'll finish with a poem. This is "Love After Love" by Derek Walcott, Caribbean poet. "The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, 'Sit here, eat.' You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread. Give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you have ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life. Sit, feast on your life." So let's take a quiet moment to finish off. this evening. May each one of us, may all beings awaken to our true potential of freedom to live a life free of suffering.